Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
There's one 5-0 team in the league right now, and it's your Seattle Seahawks. And it wasn't easy. They had a, let's call it a bumpy performance against the one-win Minnesota Vikings. They failed to convert a single third down. They didn't score at all until the second half. But it didn't matter. None of it mattered because two fourth downs proved to be enough to stage a phenomenal comeback. Russell Wilson finds DK Metcalf both times, first for a 39-yard completion, and then cut number 17 right here for a game-winning touchdown.
Russell, look out. He's going to fire inside, reaching up, making a catch. Does he hang on? He does. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown, Seahawks, and it's Metcalf who reaches up and makes the catch, crossing the field, making the catch in the middle of the end zone. And Russell finds him and throws a dart. And we all waited to see who it was, Dave, that made the catch, because it could have been anybody. But it was Metcalf going to the ground. Perfect pass by Russ, and absolutely no doubt about it, Russell Wilson comes back for his 34th career fourth quarter or overtime comeback, and Seattle now leads 27-26.
That was with 20 seconds left in the game. The Minnesota Vikings take over, 15 seconds left. They just need to get into field goal range, but the defense gets a stop by forcing a fumble. Time expires. And there you have it. The only thing missing at this point is the reaction and cheers from fans and what probably would have been MVP chants echoing through that stadium, you guys. Jake, the most important thing the Seahawks showed to me was that they can win ugly again. They've done this before. They did it again.
Ooh, they did. And just a reminder to everybody, and we finally have a fresh new cut here from Pete Carroll about asking, can you win the game in the first quarter? Pete, can you remind us, please?
Can you win the game?
No!
Can you win the game in the second quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the third quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the fourth quarter?
Yeah!
All we were missing there was just Bruce Irvin being a part of that. It would have been a magical thing.
We wouldn't have been able to play it.
that's probably true. But I want to just say one more time, because it feels so good to say it. The Seahawks are 5-0.
That's right.
The Seahawks are 5-0 for the first time in franchise history, and it feels so good. Fourth down stops, forcing turnovers, game-winning touchdowns. Simply, this team knows how to come up big when the game is on the line. This game had me up late last night. I was still wired. I think I sent my show sheet about at 2 a.m. last night. I just could not go to sleep and needed to just continue to keep rewatching that game. At one point, I was ready to break something in my house during the first half of that game. And then they just continued to find ways to make my heart pound out of my chest about six different times in the second half last night. But the one thing that remains true about this team is they have this unique trait, this unique ability that nobody else in the league, in my opinion, has and has had consistently. The way that Pete Carroll's teams have been coached and the way that Russell Wilson plays is that this team is absolutely clutch. And they had multiple moments. They had multiple moments and have had multiple games up to this point that have been clutch. And I cannot stress to you guys enough how important it is for this team to have had some of those moments already happen at this stage of the season. As they've headed into a bye, things are looking great right now.
Yeah, I use the word miracle. I mean, you can call it clutch. They're all synonyms, but they pulled off a miracle. And as I texted to you guys last night, they've already pulled off three miracles this year, including last night. It feels to me like they have a bag that's just full of these
miracles. The miracle bag?
Like a bag full of Sour Patch Kids. You know, you look in there and there's, what, about 50 of them in
there? Right, right.
It feels like they've got almost an unlimited supply, and they're just eating them. Like, Sour Patch Kids, you just eat one after the other. Nom, 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 nom. They eat them. They eat miracles the same way. That's what they do. And because of that, I'm never going to doubt them, ever. And in fact, really, because of what they pulled off already this season, even on fourth down for the Vikings there, even on their own fourth and 10 on the ensuing possession, I knew it wasn't over. I just knew it. Like, Constance is sitting next to me. She's panicked, freaking out. I'm like, you know what? I think they're going to do this. I just think they're going to do this. Big plays. Big plays. I've said it every single Monday. That's their business. Their business is big plays. And that fourth down where the Vikings were trying to sneak it across there, that's a spot where they needed one. They had made big plays all night long. Why would I expect that they would do any differently in that spot? In fact, they made a big play on the play before that when I think it was Bobby Wagner and DeMontre Moore dragged Adam Thielen out of bounds before he could get the first down. Right, so it was third down, then it was fourth down. They got it. And once they got the ball back, I mean, it's a done deal. Fourth and 10, no problem. Best quarterback in the league, maybe the best to ever do it, as is being suggested around social media today. And you got a wide receiver that is routinely now finding another gear when necessary. There's no stopping them.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, Tom. I felt a little bit nervous on that fourth and inches situation. It looked like it was wide open on the right side. I'm not proud of it, but hello, my name is Stacey Rost. I am a nervous Seahawks viewer of this game.
You're allowed to be nervous. You're allowed, you know, because that's the type of games that they play. It's okay.
Well, and let's talk about these two halves, too. I mean, you talk about the first half summary. Seattle Seahawks with 66 total net yards to Minnesota's 217. Just a bad first half overall from the Seattle Seahawks. Jake, when I hear Pete Carroll say, "Can you win the game in the first quarter?" Like, just one time, I want someone to just be like, "No, but you can take a respectable lead." Like, I just want someone
from
to
the back of the room.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I mean, you could kind of force them to throw it a bit more. Like, just like one time, just say like, "I don't know." I mean, maybe sometimes.
You know, it's funny because that is what they've done in this season, right? In this season, so far in four games, they have been able to do that. They've been able to be the person that's standing in the back saying, "Yes, you can have a respectable lead early in games." But I think it often was misconstrued as to Pete's mentality when he says this, okay? When he says, "Can you win the game in the first quarter?" It's not saying that he doesn't want to get out to those commanding leads. It's a mentality. It's a mentality that you develop as an organization, as a team, that no matter what happens in the game, good or bad, the game is not over till the final whistle blows. And that's why I think that this team has been so unique in its ability to find big plays. And you go to cut number two here, Pete Carroll talking about how close games, they're important because they build a mentality of a great team.
The experience that these guys have, it just fortifies why they believe. You know, just adds on to why they should keep hanging and fighting tough and outlast the people that were playing. Because it's when you finish, you got to outlast the other guys. And that's what our guys understand, and they know it. And they're developing a discipline based on the experience and the confidence they're getting, because that's all we've been doing for 5 weeks now. And it's just going to make us that much stronger facing whatever the odds are, the issues are coming down the road. So this is all, it's just the process of building, you know, the mentality of a really successful team.
And you couldn't have a better quarterback to carry on this mantra. You couldn't have a better middle linebacker in Bobby Wagner to carry on this mantra for you of being able to stay focused, being able to stay in it, being able to have that belief and that mentality that it's never over. And the reason why that's important is because, yes, if you're up early in games, great. You've got to finish. If you're down, you're never, ever out of the fight. And you could look at some of the leadership around this team and say, well, Jake, this group has already been there, done that. Russell Wilson's done this. This is 34th time he's done this. Bobby Wagner, same thing. Dwayne Brown, the KJ Wright, the older leadership group. But guess what? Every single year is a new team, new faces, new guys added to the role. And they need to see that. They need to witness that. They need to do it together as a group to build and fortify that bond. And once you do that, it makes you such a difficult team to beat. Doesn't matter if you're outmatched talent-wise. It doesn't matter what the outlook looks like in the game. This group will scratch, fight, and claw. And they're better, in my opinion, than anybody else at coming through in these big moments.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that later. I just want to quickly point out, Collinsworth last night on the broadcast did point out, like, yep, that's what these Seahawks are. Pete Carroll's always got them believing, and they never think they're out of it. And it occurred to me that, like, most of the guys on this team have not experienced winning in a big, big way, but they still – like, most of them are new. You know, there's only a couple of holdovers, KJ Russell and Bobby from the Super Bowl team, right, from that era. I guess you can say Benson Mayoa too. But, you know, Pete and Russell getting that message across to new players early, like the second they get here, that's important, right? Because they've got them believing right from the start. They didn't really have to learn this over the course of a season. They knew it right from the beginning. That's why they're 5-0.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross here talking about the Seahawks improving to 5-0 for the first time in franchise history to start their season. Now the only 5-0 team in the league. We're going to be going over highlights later. We've got Mike Salk joining us at 12:30. All kinds of good stuff coming up. But first, let's get to three questions.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we gotta protect the kids" nonsense.
So on the deep ball to DK Metcalf, probably, I mean, other than the touchdown itself, probably the biggest play of that possession. Travis Homer threw himself in front of a truck to ensure that Russell could get that throw off comfortably. Is he the unsung hero of that entire drive, Stacey?
Yeah, I think so. I think I saw this from at Hawk Blogger as well. He had like a screenshot and video of it that I hadn't noticed before. And I think that it's not the first time he's done that also. Against the Miami Dolphins, there's a really important, I think it's a third or fourth down conversion where Russell Wilson scrambles for, I believe, something like 18 yards. That was in part because Travis Homer gets a great block. So he has been able to kind of throw his body in the way to keep a play alive. I think that I absolutely agree with your general question. Yes, that drive isn't successful if Travis Homer doesn't throw that block.
It was great recognition by him. They brought down the safety, one of the safeties down on one side, so he was focused on that. Scans his eyes across the field when he realizes he's going back in coverage. They were trying to disguise the nickel corner coming off the edge. He runs over there and takes the shot. It gets absolutely run over, but does his job and gives Russell Wilson the time to throw. So, yes, unsung hero of that particular play. But I will say, this is the reason why Travis Homer is out on the field. I see some people knocking Travis Homer. Hey, why is this guy on the field? Why is he getting carries? Because he does the right thing. Because he has developed a role that is absolutely vital to this team. And when it comes to being a pass protector, especially with Russell Wilson passing the ball more often, that's a vital, vital role. And Travis Homer is doing an outstanding job. I've been meaning to bring him up the last couple weeks and just haven't. But I'm glad you did, Tom, because he deserves a lot of credit for the role that he's doing in protecting and being that reliable third down back.
Yeah, and I'll confess, I've been one of those people at times that says, why is he on the field? Where's Carson? But when you watch that play, it's like, oh, okay. It's a team game. You need guys like him to be out there doing that. Excellent. Next play.
Number two.
Who gets the game ball? Many heroes in the game. Big plays. I mean, look, Russell and Metcalf, if you want to do the obvious thing, I'm fine with that. But who gets the game ball, Jake?
Oh, my gosh. This is a tough one. I mean, yeah, those are the two obvious ones. But there are a couple other guys that I thought did an outstanding job. You look at KJ Wright and the plays that he made. I thought he was outstanding. I thought Benson Mayoa was a really good player throughout that entire game, making plays. Jaron Reed, to me, mm-hmm. I think Jaron Reed, if you were to rank it, I think you've got Russ and DK. Jaron Reed would probably be number three to me in terms of game ball. He was the only bright spot of that entire first half outside of Michael Dixon. I mean, Jaron Reed would finally showed up and showed that he can be an elite player in this league. Like, we all know that he can. This was his first time doing it here in 2020, and I hope that remains here through every single game.
Yeah, I was going to give it to DK Metcalf, not to be boring, but 6 receptions for 93 yards and 2 touchdowns. You got to give it to him. But I will say, if it isn't DK Metcalf, I got to say it's KJ Wright. I know his kind of biggest moments came at the beginning of the third quarter, but he had a fumble recovery to put Seattle in scoring position. That becomes a touchdown. An interception to put them in scoring position again. That becomes another touchdown. Seahawks end up scoring 3 touchdowns in less than 2 minutes, in a big part because of KJ Wright, with some help additionally from DeMontre Moore there. So I got to give it to them too.
By the way, your bold pick, how many...
I said 3
touchdowns. Did you say Metcalf was going to have?
I said 3 touchdowns for DK Metcalf. I was so close. I'm going to count that other one as a touchdown. I'm counting yeah, it as a touchdown. Yeah. I think if they rule it a touchdown on the field, there might not be enough to overturn it. You don't have to survive the ground anymore.
You guys are missing the math here. If he catches that, he doesn't get the other one. But okay.
If they would have gone for 2 and it would have been to DK Metcalf, I would have counted that as a touchdown.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I was so close.
So close. So close.
Number 3.
Okay. We all agree that we don't doubt this team. But just hypothetically, how many scores would they have to be down with how much time left before you say, okay, this just can't happen? There aren't enough possessions left. We just need, what kind of scenario in a game while it's still going on would keep you from believing that they can come back, Jake?
Depending on how the game is going, but just in a general sense, down 3 scores, fourth quarter. Down 3 scores, fourth quarter, I think that's a really tough spot to come back from. And even as
any
I'm saying
point
it,
in
I'm thinking to myself, any point in the fourth quarter, that's a really, really tough.
Yeah.
Two scores, I'm not as nervous about because they eat those up like candy. Like somehow Russell Wilson and this team, 2 scores, they manage those situations beautifully. But 3 scores, that's an entirely different ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna second that too, especially if the other team's controlling the time of possession there, which... You just inevitably, in a single quarter, if you got to get the ball back 3 times, I mean, it's going to be really difficult. I'm going to say if it is anything more than a touchdown and a 2-point conversion, I think Russell Wilson can get anything done with 2 minutes. If there's an 8-point lead, 2 minutes left, I'm thinking like there's a chance. There's definitely a chance here. Even like enough time for a drive, 30 seconds, I'm thinking like there might be a chance here. I think that those 8, it's just, it's done. 2 minutes, like, it's so rare to do that. I know I just said they scored 3 touchdowns in 2 minutes, but totally different situation.
See, I'd go 4 scores only because we've seen him score 21 points in a quarter before. Like, I'll doubt at that point. I'd say 3 scores and 10 minutes to go, I'll doubt, but I'm not counting him out at that point. I mean, things can happen. Fumbles, you get the other coach starting to panic, throws, you know, wastes a timeout. You know, things get weird, especially at home. So I'll say 4 scores, 10 minutes to go. Next. Oh, I have a bonus one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know that there's no fourth question sounder. So based on what we've seen out of DK Metcalf, do you think that pick, trading back up just a hair to get him, has that now become a franchise-changing pick? What do you think, Jake?
Yes. So, yes, it has been a franchise-changing pick. They are not letting Russ cook if DK Metcalf is not on this roster. They've hit on a receiver that they haven't hit on in a long time. And when you pair him and Tyler Lockett together, I mean, this is a duo that's the best in the NFL. I mean, it is really, really difficult for teams to stop. And because of what DK gives them the ability to do offensively, it is franchise changing. I mean, think about this. Pete Carroll's doing something that he's never done in his coaching philosophy ever. And DK Metcalf has influence on that change by the connection that him and Russell have and by the sheer talent that he brings to this offense. It's a franchise changing draft pick.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking with someone post-game about like what's DK Metcalf's ceiling. I know that it's early and you have to have a lot in your career go right, but I don't see why his ceiling can't be some of the best ever. I don't know why it can't be, you know, like a Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones. What if it's a, you know, Randy Moss type player? Obviously, DK Metcalf is not there. He's in year two. He's got stuff he's got to improve on. But he has the tools, right? He's got the tools. He's got the work ethic. He's got the drive to get there. You need a lot else to go right. You know, you can't have major injuries sideline you for a long time. You got to make sure your team's winning, your quarterback's on the same page. All kinds of stuff has to happen. But his ceiling is so sky high that he is, in that sense, a franchise-altering player. I mean, you can be, like Jake said, a different offense with him on your team.
I remember, just the reason why I ask is because I remember the types of reactions I had when I first saw Randy Moss in the league. Like, I remember sitting there on this one particular couch watching him on Thanksgiving just torch the Cowboys. I mean, he just went off in what was, I think, was his first year. And when I watch DK play, I'm having those same types of reactions. And you're right. You got to stay healthy. And he's got to keep getting better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You got to keep it up. And probably have big postseason moments and all those types of things, which hopefully he'll have. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could get there.
I actually, so someone texted in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, if you want to join this conversation at any point during our show. 360 says, then why did he go so late in the draft if he's that good? I really do think that when someone has that much promise, people feel like there's another shoe that's going to drop, right? And I think that when there's a player that is that insanely talented, that's when people look for flaws and they think like, well, I mean, would this really work? Russell Wilson, he can make all the plays, but he's 5'10". I mean, come on, you know, that's going to bite you eventually. How can you see over your own offensive linemen? How could you possibly do that? I think with DK Metcalf, it was like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's got all the weapons. He looks like, you know, a football player made out of stone on the field. But what about that three-cone drill? You got to worry about it. I really do think people just look for a, like, what's the but? What about this year? You know what I mean? Because it is too perfect a situation in the moment. All right. If you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Mike, you know, I'm looking over the Seahawks' final stats here. I know that you've been worried that, hey, you might not want to let Russ cook. You know, it's fun now, but what happens when it gets cold and rainy and the weather doesn't let you do that and you have drop passes and fumbles? And, you know, I'm looking at this right now, and it says the Seahawks got almost 70% of their first downs by passing. Do you think that's ultimately what cost them this game? Oh, sorry. No, they actually won the game. Yeah. So that ended up not mattering. So how'd that feel? Because I know that you would have been ready to come in here to tell us that's what was wrong.
Well, it's a great point, Stacey. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm still concerned about that.
Yeah.
I've just seen this movie before. Where, and Peyton Manning was this for a long time, we've seen it with these teams where they're built on high-flying passing attacks, and they do that in either in good weather or in September and October or in domes or wherever the case may be, and then eventually they get put into a difficult spot where that doesn't work because the weather doesn't allow it, because the game changes, especially as you get later into the year and into the playoffs. And those things aren't always as successful as they look when you're watching in good weather and everything's perfect and ideal in September. So, yeah, I think we saw it. Yes, the Seahawks offense was not the same offense. Amazingly, what is it that bailed the Seahawks out yesterday? It was Russell in the final few minutes. Don't get me wrong, but it was their defense coming up with three huge plays. The interception, the fumble, and then the fourth down stop. I mean, those are the reasons that the Seahawks won the game yesterday, in addition to Russell's final drive and the heroics he had on those two fourth downs. So I still stand by that fear.
Yeah.
I'm worried that if you have a team that, while the defense thankfully has been opportunistic in its big moments, has been essentially run over mean, they were embarrassed yesterday for most of the game, and thankfully came up with the three biggest plays when they absolutely needed them. But you know, I if you watched that game and didn't come away concerned about their defense, you know, I think that you should be. I mean, it's not like Minnesota has a great offense, and they were able to run over the Seahawks and pass through the Seahawks almost at will.
But, Mike, what can they really do about that at this point? I mean, like, it's one thing to argue, okay, should they run more? Should they pass more? They can alter those things. Defensively, they've got the talent that they do. Like, that's just what we're going with.
Well, I still think there are things they can do. I mean, you know, you're seeing some of these teams that are now giving up, right? The Jets, the Falcons, the, you know, name a few others, the Giants, a few others that are basically done now for the year. I think Howdy, of all people, has been all over this and saying you've got to be looking at those rosters and seeing if there are some people you could pick off of them in order to help your pass rush or wherever else it is you think that you need that extra edge. They went and signed Snacks Harrison. I think that's a good start. And after watching Dalvin Cook and that other guy, whatever his name is, run through them yesterday, I mean, I can't wait to get Snacks in there because I think they really need that extra help. So I think there are still things they can do, and if they're looking to add, you know, you need to be trying to shore up a weakness right now, I think, instead of trying to add to a strength.
Now, so it's really hard because you, on one end, there's so much to be concerned about this defense. There truly is. And then on the other end, you look at some of these games and you go, well, gosh, they keep making these big plays that are major factors into them winning, right? You can't disregard that. Is that something that is just uncomfortable relying on those big plays while you see yardage given up, points given up, but hey, they're going to come up with key stops and big moments? How do you reconcile with that?
It's a tough question, Jake, and I'm not sure I really know the answer to it other than to say I don't want to say that they feel fluky. That's not right, but if you're capable of stopping the run in those big moments on those fourth down plays with Cam Newton or yesterday on fourth down, why aren't you capable of doing it throughout the game? And I think the answer is there's got to be a bit of luck that was involved in that. And I don't mean to demean the plays they made. They've made them. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'm confident that they're going to continue to make them. I feel a lot more confident with a good defense. When the Seahawks in 13 and 14, et cetera, were at their peak, you expected them to make the big plays when it mattered. Regardless of the fact that they've made a few of those now, I don't have that same level of expectation because they're not doing it throughout the game the way those 2013, 14, 15 defenses did. So it's especially as you're going to face some better competition. Again, you've yet to really face a very good team. Yeah, the Dolphins are okay. The Cowboys aren't terrible. I mean, you haven't faced necessarily all bad ones. But let's see what happens when they face the Rams twice, when they face Arizona and San Francisco both have suffered at times. But when you face Buffalo, when you face the teams, eventually Green Bay, hopefully in the postseason, do you count on that same defense to make those plays with Aaron Rodgers instead of Kirk Cousins? Do you count on them to make those same stops against Buffalo, a really good team that they did against Minnesota? Are they going to treat the Rams the same way they treated Miami? I mean, that's just they're not the same kinds of teams, and so I've got my concern, but I don't want to sit here being concerned today. At the end of it, the biggest takeaway you have from the game is Russell Wilson got the pub at the beginning as the MVP, the Sue Bird thing, and all the whole PR campaign. Everybody's on the Russell Wilson for MVP deal, and he proved it. At the end of the game, he didn't have his best game ever. He had a bad interception and wasn't really able to drive the team much of anywhere in the first half. But MVP quarterbacks have game-winning drives at the end. When the ball is in their hands with a chance to win, they get it done. It's why I think quarterback wins are an incredibly important stat, despite people laughing about it. Quarterbacks win because of what they do in the final couple minutes of games. Most NFL games come down to the final few minutes. And that's where Russell Wilson shines, and he did it once again yesterday.
What's the ceiling of the offense?
Gosh, is there one? I mean, like, they're capable of just about anything. Russell has proven right now this year there's nothing he can't do. If you give him time in the pocket, he'll pick you apart. If you rush him, There was a play last night, Jake, maybe you remember this one specifically. It was a small little play, but it wowed me, where Russell came on a little, what looked to be like a little bootleg where he was going to run to his left. And as soon as he got, as soon as he looked up, there was a player rushing right at him. And he just all of a sudden turned around, ran right instead, and found somebody on the other side of the field, what appeared to be away from where the play was designed, and still picked up 6 or 8 yards. I want to say it was to Chris Carson, but I'm not sure if that's correct.
Yeah, it was.
And
it was.
So, gosh, this guy's unbelievable. Even when you have the perfect defense in place to stop the play that they've called, he just does something small, subtle, and perfect to get positive yardage out of it. I mean, when Russ is playing like that and DK is the kind of physical freak that he is, and you still have Tyler Lockett, and by the way, they're going to get your buddy back, Dorsett. I mean, like, Chris Carson, I don't even know that we fully explored everything that he can do, because I still think this team is capable of running better than they've shown so far. So what are they capable of? Anything. Honestly, I just think the world of what this offense can do.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him on the weekly Brock and Salk podcast. New episodes drop Tuesday nights, and you can always hear him every day at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Mike, thanks so much.
5-0, guys. Thanks.
All right. The Seahawks defense made some huge game-changing plays last night, but they also allowed over 200 rushing yards. So we try to make sense of it all next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Seattle Seahawks are 5-0 to start the season for the first time in franchise history. So let's take a specific look at this defense. You had a couple great individual performances. KJ Wright with an interception, fumble recovery. Both of those lead to Seahawks touchdowns. You had Benson Mayoa with a sack and a forced fumble to seal the win. DeMontre Moore also causing another fumble. A great play by him on special teams as well. But it didn't all come together, because the Seattle Seahawks, outside of a string of really solid plays to start the third quarter, and I would say two phenomenal plays to help Seattle win the game in the final minute of the fourth quarter, weren't great. They struggled. They allowed 200-plus rushing yards from Dalvin Cook and backup running back Alexander Mattison. Mattison, by the way, got 100-plus rushing yards in the second half alone when he started filling in for Cook. Not great. You allowed 449 total net yards from the Vikings, not to mention 26 points, including two back-to-back touchdowns to Adam Thielen in the fourth quarter. It just felt at times like they couldn't stop them. Jake, you admitted that you also were a bit nervous at that fourth and inches kind of play, thought, oh, this might be it right here with the way they'd been playing. Can you help us make sense of where the defense is right now? Because on the one hand, they've made big plays fairly consistently. On the other hand, they've struggled in big ways, and it didn't help that they, you know, struggled against the run, an area where we thought that they would be pretty solid.
Well, it's hard to make sense of it, to be honest with you, because what they have been able to do kind of defies logic, right? That fourth and one, for anybody that was nervous out there, you're the norm. Okay. At that point, I was pulling my hair out. Like, literally, my hair was just like going all sorts of crazy, because I just was so frustrated by what was going on and frustrated to be in that moment. But, Tom, as you've seen time and time again, them continue to make big plays in big moments. You took the other side of believing that they'll do it again, and they came through on that. But everything up to that point tells you that with the lack of ability to stop the run, the lack of ability to really stop the Minnesota Vikings from going up and down the field, that even the percentages, everything was in your favor at that moment for Mike Zimmer to go for it on fourth and one and seal the game. And what happened in that game, guys, honestly, you guys, we talked about it multiple times last week, was my fear was is that their stats, they were coming into that game, the third-ranked best run defense, that their stats were deceiving, and that this team wasn't as good stopping the run as their stats indicated, and that was confirmed. It really was. They had a really hard time doing that throughout the game, and I think that if you're looking at the Seahawks, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, the Buffalo Bills, the LA Rams, those are the next four opponents that they're going to face in the next 5 weeks. This is really the blueprint to how to beat the Seattle Seahawks, is to, instead of trying to match score for score and pass the ball and go with Russell Wilson from that standpoint, it's to try and control the ball, control the time of possession, and limit the amount of times that the Seahawks offense could get out on the field. I mean, we all witnessed the first half. That could not have gone any better for Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota Vikings. And so that, to me, is a problem when you just look at the talent that they have on their front seven, not the linebackers, but their defensive linemen interior. It's hard. Jaron Reed and Puna Ford can't play the entire game, guys. It's just too difficult. But if you want to look at it from a positive standpoint,
we do.
After the bye here, your team, your defense should be fully healthy. No more excuses. No more, hey, so-and-so's out. You should have Snacks Harrison coming in reinforcement. Jamal Adams should be back in reinforcement. All the other guys who've been dealing with nicks and bruises should be back with reinforcement. Jordan Brooks should be back. I mean, your defense finally for the first time will be healthy and have some stability. So I think the fact that they've been able to overcome this is amazing, and to be 5-0 is truly incredible. But yeah, there are definitely some concerns there when you look at, have teams seen the blueprint of how to beat the Seattle Seahawks after this Sunday night matchup?
Yeah, and I'll give both of you credit, because you guys talked about that last week. You know, you doubted as to whether or not the run defense really proved that they deserve to be, what, ranked second in the league after really not having been run on at all. And by the way, you know, I predicted that Dalvin Cook would be held to under 80 yards rushing, but...
I mean, technically it happened.
Not really in that
way. I would take credit for that, Tom. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, Tom knew that this guy was overrated, that he was an injury waiting to happen. I mean, you called it.
Well, anybody can run on this defense. Oh, my God.
Tom.
No, he clearly, had he stayed healthy in the game, clearly. And by the way, I was glad to see that he came back out, that his season isn't over. But I was also relieved that he didn't come back into the game. That notwithstanding, yes, that is the blueprint, especially when you have a quarterback like Cousins who you're not automatically going to put the ball in his hands. If it were like Andy Reid with Mahomes, I think he actually has a tougher decision. I think you're probably going to still put the ball in the quarterback's hands. That's neither here nor there, though. Look, the Seahawks are going to lose a game eventually because of their defense. I mean, they've been exposed already. They haven't lost a game because of it, but they've been exposed. I still think, though, the ultimate question is, are they capable of winning a Super Bowl? I think yes. They are capable of beating an Aaron Rodgers or beating a Patrick Mahomes or whoever in the playoffs, even with these problems. Now, there's no precedent to win a Super Bowl with a defense that gives up this kind of yardage and that gets gashed like that, but... none of those teams, no Super Bowl winning team, other than the Seahawks themselves, had Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. Now, that may sound a little flowery on my part, but look, all that work that they do with Trevor Moad, who is Russell's mental skills coach, or Pete's belief and his positivity, all the, you know, the mental skills coaching and the people that he brings in to talk to them, et cetera,
yep.
That stuff has to make a difference somewhere along the line. There's no way for me to prove that the miracles that they pull out one after another are the result, the direct result of any of those practices that I mentioned. I happen to think that they are. And if you come at me and you say, well, prove it, Tom, I can't. But there is something different about the way this organization is run, especially at the bottom, or not the bottom, but with the players and Pete Carroll. Just that attitude. That attitude matters. It just does. So I think that that's the difference between Minnesota not being able to pull out what they had to do and Seattle doing it.
Yeah, it's that belief. There's no question, Tom. And it's that belief, that ability to, no matter what's going on in the moment, that they feel like they can come up with the big play. They can come up with the big stop. And that's something that this Seahawks defense has routinely done. But there was something that I heard from Pete Carroll in the Pete Carroll show. with Danny and Gallant here in cut number three that really was encouraging to me. He was talking about Jaron Reed and how he actually, the day before the game, called out the defense, and he stepped his game up with everybody else.
He spoke to the defense the other night, Saturday night, and Kenny had called him up to talk to him, and he had a little video that he wanted to show, and he had a lot to challenge the guys with. And so when you do that, you know, really good guys know that they're always challenging themselves, you know, to, I got to live up to it. It's like Bobby does week in and week out. You know, he's always challenging the guys, and he knows he has to go. I think that was there was a unique part of this weekend that Jaron did some talking and said some stuff that, you know, he wanted to be, and he wanted our guys to be, and why not us kind of thing. And that's really when you set the stage for yourself. You know, he had to live up to it, and he did.
And guys, you know, when someone like that, Jaron Reed, who isn't necessarily the main leader on the team, but is one of your highest paid players and someone that you're counting on to be a star for your team. Well, he played like that on Sunday. He played at a very high level on Sunday. And sometimes when you put more accountability on yourself, when you put yourself out there in front of the team and demand greatness from everybody else, it brings something out of you. And I was really encouraged to hear that, because if this unit can continue to keep working together and keep striving to get better, maybe it's not the way that we're all hoping it will be, but if they can continue to keep making the big plays and incrementally get better, as you said, Tom, this group's got a chance. This group definitely has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ceiling is a little bit higher than maybe we're giving it credit for, based on their performance through 5 weeks so far. There's just too much talent for me to accept that they'll continue to struggle the way that they have. Like, you've got Bobby Wagner, multi-time All-Pro, right? You've got KJ Wright, Jamal Adams is going to get back healthy. Quandre Diggs, I think, is a great safety. Jaron Reed. And then you're also going to get Rasheem Green back. You're going to get Daryl Taylor, potentially. Jordan Brooks coming back after the break, too. Snacks Harrison, who you added, should make his debut here soon. I mean, I feel like there's too much talent. There is too much talent for you to have a low ceiling. Is it going to be the top defense in the league? No. Like, it's not. Through 5 weeks, no, it will not. But I think it can be a lot better than it has been. And I think that we could see that coming out of this break, especially when you get guys back healthy. All right, get ready for another rush of adrenaline, you guys, because we're taking you back through the highlights from Sunday's win next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.